WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's Phone-In Talk Show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Oh, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Pleasure to be here, as usual, all ready to go. And I got one missing element. That's you. But that is easily accomplished. When you have something, what we call in the biz, over-modulating. Let me just turn my microphone down here a little. Okay, there you go. So I don't drive our engineering staff crazy. Except, where are they? It's about 94 inside the WRIF studios here. Anyway, got a lot of things to talk about. The State of the Union, the Iraq election, more on that. Social Security, another one of those phony crises invented by the Bush gang. Our health, yeah, and psycho-righties, the psycho-right wing. Here's our problem. People to the left of center, we do things like sleep, have fun, do things, you know, go listen to music. These guys are just planning how to twist and distort this country's traditions and what have you. Twistoids is what I call these psycho-righties. Anyways, here's how you get involved in the program. 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-WRIF. I've been giving this number out for a few years. Believe it. And someone said to me, why don't you give the numbers also? Like, and you know what? I have no idea, after all these years, what the WRIF is. And I can't really see it from here. Probably 9-something, eh? Anyways, if you're a little bashful or far away and don't want to spend the dime, call talkyes at yahoo.com. You'll get me an email that way. If it's short, there's a chance I'll read it on the air. If it's long, I'll try to read it the next day. The longer it is, the less of a chance I'll read it, because I get so many. My website, peterwerby.com, nothing to do with WRIF. It's my own personal website, Peter Werby, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. You know what chat rooms are? Most of you do, particularly if you're younger. That's where you kind of talk simultaneously. And you can talk about this show while it's on the air by going to TomHartman.com. TomHartman.com, you got to sign up for the chat room and all that. But it's Tom's chat room, so he's got a nationally syndicated show that does not come into Detroit. But during this time, he lets us piggyback on that. All right, the sorry state of the union. It depends. You know, if you're one of the rich buddies of Bush, you're doing okay. Here in America, though, cost of living is rising. Gas, again, almost up to $2. Unemployment rate, particularly in Michigan, very, very bad. And now what Bush said, essentially, you got to see, I didn't advise that. I mean, for some reason I didn't advise it, because who the hell am I to advise you? You can figure these things out. But I guess my opinion is it's a total waste of time to watch speeches on television, because they don't give you the capacity to think critically about them. They're, no matter who's giving them, politician you love or a politician you hate or a politician that you're going to watch neutrally, they have these very crafted presentations. Everything from the suit they wear to the background, all the flags and all of that. And they've sometimes even done focus groups, what they call it. You know, they get people in and they see how people react to the content of the speech. So I think it's absolutely worthless in terms of trying to evaluate what policy is. I mean, for one thing, now, and this is nothing new to Bush, but as everything has increased or decreased, increase if it's worse and decreased if it's was good. The State of the Union speech under the last maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 presidents has just been essentially a political speech. It's not really a report. You know, this State of the Union is required by the Constitution, and the president is supposed to lay out his political agenda. But essentially, Bush Co., Bush Incorporated, given the fascistic mentality that prevails among them, they don't want to just be the dominant political force in the United States. They want to destroy the political opposition. So everything that you heard, if you did watch it, or everything you read the next day, as I did, of course, all of it is to give more and more money to the corporations and the rich at the expense of the middle class and the working class. But it's also a device, a political device, setting Bush up for the next round of elections in 2006, where they hope that they can almost eliminate the Democratic Party. So we had the State of the Union, and so right now we're being told there's going to be all these cutbacks, that they're going to slash spending for education, housing, health care for the poor, and at the same time Bush is asking for $80 billion to finance the war against Iraq. Already, depending on how you count, 150 to 200 billion has already gone down the drain in this war based on a lie that has destroyed the country of Iraq. Cost tens of thousands of lives, including going up towards 1,500 Americans and over 10,000 American wounded. And you can just imagine what the Iraqi people have suffered. I'm not even talking about the people on the other side. The Iraqi army, when Bush invaded, God, almost 2 years ago, this is how long this has been going on, or the insurgents now. I'm talking about innocent Iraqi people that had to pay with their lives and their limbs for Bush's lie. Because he knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. If you listen to this program, he knew there was no weapons of mass destruction. I mean, the two senators from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow and Carl Levin, knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. That's why they voted against the war resolution, for instance. So, what's going on then is that we're looking at a downward spiral, and for what? I mean, the Democrats are saying, you know, they're almost getting some spine. This Representative Woolsey introduced a resolution for the U.S. to withdraw troops from Iraq. Ted Kennedy said we ought to begin, when did he say, by the end of the year or by the beginning of next year, we ought to begin withdrawing troops. You know how many more people are going to be dead? How many more Iraqis and how many more Americans are going to be dead by, you know, with almost a year goes by? And The criticism of the Democrats is that Bushco has no exit strategy. And, you know, they're, oh, how dare you say that? Well, the Democrats, for once, they're right. There is no exit strategy. You know why? There's no exit. They don't intend any exit. There's no plan in the upper halls of government to get out of there. In fact, I forgot about that. Yeah, we've got a great interview at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And I say Eastern Time because people are listening all over the country, all over the world. Hello to our international listeners. We'll even get to some of their email a little later. Thank you for listening. But there's no intent to leave. This is this long-range strategy that has been going on since the 90s on the part of these neoconservatives that are these control freaks. And part of what they want to control is the world economy, and they want to control the world's military, put it a different way. They want to be positioned. They want to have the United States positioned militarily in a strategic manner so people to control the world. Well, the only problem with this is it don't work, and it's going to bankrupt us. They were being run by crazy people, essentially. People that are out of their minds with power, that already have this enormous amount of wealth. So much so that it's beginning to look like, I don't know what, ancient Rome or something. We don't ask questions here, if you're waiting for that, by the way. Now, Bush is going to cut all of these programs. I mean, and I'll get to this. He's going to cut about 150 programs from his $2.5 trillion budget, and he's saying to restrain spending across a wide swath of government, from popular farm subsidies to poor people's health programs. Now, we could debate about farm subsidies and who gets it. I mean, there are problems with the farm subsidies. A lot of corporate farms get that. But he's slashing poor people's health programs. Rich people are making out like the bandits they are, being given this money, you know, these tax breaks that are absolutely unneeded, and who's going to pay for it? The poor. Well, and you and I, because the budget deficit now is going to reach $427 billion. And, you know, if you're thinking, wow, man, what's this guy just talking about the budget deficit and all that? You know, I don't care about that. Why does he talk about legalizing pot or something like that? Well, you're going to be paying for this, my friend, and I'm going to be paying for this. Because when you are in debt, as those of you with credit cards know, when you're in debt, there's an interest fee charged every month. And that's what happens on the money that the United States borrows. It was absolutely unnecessary. But now what's going on is that the United States is a debtor nation. So we got to pay debt service. So we is used advisedly. You and I, our tax dollars, are going to pay the debt service on this unnecessary debt that Bush Co. ran up. Now, John McCain says he praised the budget. I'm glad the president's coming over with a very austere budget. I hope we in Congress will have the courage to support it. Now, I've spoken like a true millionaire. Now, part of what we have to look at is this whole deal with Social Security. Now, this is from the man and the government that depending, if you want to be charitable about it, which I have no intention of doing, if you want to be charitable about it, the Bush Co. was part of this catastrophic intelligence failure on 9/11 and attempted to make up for it by basing the invasion, the illegal invasion of a nation, of Iraq, on the basis of incorrect information, of incorrect intelligence, something that tens of millions of people in the United States didn't believe. And great numbers of Congress didn't believe, great numbers of the intelligence community didn't believe. But I don't know really what went on there. Maybe just Bush Co. thought, well, we can sell the American people on anything. Damn, they were right. All those dead bodies stacked to the ceiling, American and Iraqi, and people are saying, oh, yeah, that's great, they voted, which is a whole other thing as well. Now, here is what Lee Price says. He's the research director at the Economic Policy Institute. You got to remember, Bush, by the way, when he ran for Congress in 1978, he said that Social Security had to be privatized because it was going to be bankrupt in 1988. That's what he said when he was just a young man, probably still, you know, doing a lot of cocaine and stuff like that, driving around drunk, getting his girlfriend an abortion, all that stuff. Hey, George Bush, the only president in the history of the United States to enter the Oval Office with a criminal record. Anyways, here's what happened. We have deficits largely caused by tax cuts that have cut revenue by more than 2% of the gross, what do they call that? I can't remember what the GDP, at least it used to be the gross national product, now they call it the GDP. It'll come to me in a second. So anyways, these tax cuts to the rich wound up cutting out 2% of the money coming into the government. So, hello, that was a big mistake, because now, rather than a nation with a surplus, we became a nation in debt. And you and I pay the debt. I mean, sure, the rich people and their taxes have to pay it too, but you know, that's not much for them. And they can buy all their needs. Most of us depend, you know, on our income and government programs for some of us. Anyways, here's the deal. The Congressional Budget Office projects that the Social Security system's 75-year shortfall is only 0.4% of GDP, one-fifth of the size of the president's tax cuts. So do you realize 0.4, not even 1%? So if it wasn't for Bush's tax cuts, there wouldn't be any shortfall at all. If he hadn't cut taxes for the rich, there wouldn't be a single problem. Now, the other thing is, and this is, I've interviewed him before, Mark Weisbrot, who is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He says 13 years from now, in 2018, Social Security will be paying out more than it takes in. Bush is saying that in 2018, Social Security will have to pay out more in benefits than it receives in payroll taxes. He's saying, you know, Bush thinks flat broke. It's going to be flat broke. In other words, like 0% of us, I'm sorry, not 0% of us, but there will be And what does flat broke mean? It means you don't have any money. You're gone. You can't pay your bills. You can't pay your rent. You can't pay your car payment. Nothing. So retirees will have what, according to Bush, if the Social Security system is flat broke? Nothing. Nothing will be able to be paid out, according to Bush, because there won't be anything there. This is another monstrous lie on the level of the weapons of mass destruction. Massive lie. Well, according to the Social Security Trust Fund, which is, you know, I'm sorry, the Social Security trustees that run the Social Security Trust Fund, in, let me see if I can read this and trying to stop summarizing it here. 13 years from now, Bush declared in 2018, Social Security will be paying out more than it takes in. Now, Mark Weisbrot says, Bush is saying that in 2018, Social Security will have to pay out more in benefits than it receives in payroll taxes, about $16 billion more, according to the Social Security trustees' estimates. What he did not say is that the Social Security Trust Fund in 2018 will have more than $3.6 trillion in assets, as well as $206 billion in interest income that year. And so if Social Security cruises along on autopilot for the next 13 years, 2018 will arrive and depart quietly and without notice. In 2018, a small fraction of Social Security's interest income will be used to pay benefits. So we are not flat broke at all. In fact, the best that they can come up with, Congress's budget analysts have estimated the program's trust funds will be depleted in 2052. Not in 2018, in 2052. How many of us are going to be alive? A good number of us will be alive probably then. Meaning that beneficiaries will be able to count on receiving only 78% of their scheduled benefits beginning then. That means if nothing is done whatsoever, people still would be able to get 80% of expected benefits. So there's no crisis. So 22% has to be made up. Well, you can make it up real easily. Just like I just said, you restore those taxes on the wealthy. That's no problem. They're not going to be hurting. Want to make sure we're not hurting. We don't want to take benefit cuts when we retire. We don't want to pay more money now. And our children and our grandchildren, who are in the middle class and the working class, shouldn't have to pay more when we have wealthy people that can way easily afford it. I mean, it's that easy. It is that easy. But here, my friend Harvey Wasserman, who's been on the show before, writing in the Columbus Free Press, Columbus, Ohio. He said, let's cut the actuary. I'm not even going to try that one again. You know, these guys that are actuaries. Doublespeak. Bush comes not to save Social Security, but to bury it. Ever since Franklin Roosevelt installed the most successful social program in U.S. history, far-right fanatics of the Bush ilk have been trying to destroy it. They may be on the brink of succeeding. Fundamentalist conservatives despise any social welfare program that works. Their stark ideological crusade demands the dismantling of any program through which society can exert control over the economy or our common heritage, such as the natural environment. Their demand is precisely the opposite when it comes to personal and cultural behavior. You hear what he's saying? On one hand, they're always saying, the market, let the market take care of everything. Of course, the market would destroy most if we didn't have artificial props. Like minimum wage and unions and what have you, we'd all be working for $3 an hour, and these guys would get all the more money. But when it comes to personal and cultural choices, the fundamentalist right wants the government to legislate morality when it comes to things like sexual choice, gay marriage, recreational preferences, marijuana, women's rights, freedom to choose, free speech, the Patriot Act, free press, censorship, sexual expression, the Federal Communications Commission, religion, official prayer, education, no evolution, human rights, Guantanamo, the sanctity of life, death penalty, and much more. So all this is in the name of family values. But when it comes to really central core economic well-being issues, oh, they go, oh, we just want the market to take care of it. We just want the market to take care of it. Well, a lot of people are saying that these private accounts, oh, man. Wait, we're going to get rich. Well, it ain't going to happen. Don't even think about it. I mean, don't even dream about it. New York Times today says that privatized system actually contains hidden costs that could leave retirees with less. Your Social Security benefit would be reduced dollar for dollar by the amount of money you deposit into your private account and an additional charge amounting to 3% plus the rate of inflation. All the money that is drained off would presumably go to pay for the enormous upfront government borrowing, $4.5 trillion over the next 20 years that privatization would require. You getting the picture? For one thing, it would be a big giveaway to their Wall Street buddies who would get all these fees, hundreds of billions of dollars for administering these personal accounts. The Times says neither the president nor his aides have been willing to acknowledge the extent of benefit cuts that will be needed. And no wonder. All in all, they would leave the average worker with a government benefit worth only 10% of his or her pre-retirement earnings. Right now, it's like 35%. And according to the Washington Post, one final thing, a senior administration official who briefed reporters on the Social Security proposal disclosed details of the White House plan that this associate editor of the Washington Post says I don't think will play very well in Peoria, Illinois. This official revealed that most or all the earnings from the new personal or privatized accounts will be paid not to the holder of the account, but to the government. The senior official called this a benefit offset. It's one way to finance the creation of these private accounts, but it's going to cause quite a stir. So it's another ruse. If you were I'm sorry, this may sound cruel, but if you were dumb enough to believe Bush about weapons of mass destruction, and then you found out that he was at best wrong and at worst a liar, are you going to be this dumb to swallow this as well? I don't think the American people will. All right, yeah, here, somebody called in to say 248, anyway, it's 313, folks, 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-WRIF is 298-9742. All right, I'm Peter Werbe, and you can call that number. You can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And let's see. Ooh, we've got to find out where on our board do our telephone calls come up. It's different every time, folks. Hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. To make this really short, without shoving my face right into your butt, I was whooping down the road the first time I heard you before Bush was elected, because I thought the whole world had gone insane, which it had, and then they actually elected him. But you were the only person saying what I thought. And I want to tell you that it actually saved my sanity at that time. And also, you're the only person that said anything about what I thought. I quit watching TV altogether just so I wouldn't have to see the Iraqi invasion with my own eyes because I was so against it. And you mirror my thoughts. So in that, you're godlike.
Well, you know what? You know what? Susan, then you there's probably millions of us godlike people, because we're certainly not alone. And in fact, if you looked even at the 2004 election, it was statistically a dead heat. And that with the press, the media being so closely attuned to the point where sometimes it seems like Pravda or Izvestia in the old Soviet Union. So even with the mainstream media just echoing the thoughts of Bush and apologizing for him at every turn and not holding him to task for when his policies fail. Like, for instance, they found out through these focus groups that I was mentioning earlier that people don't like the sound of privatized accounts, or private accounts, rather. So now the media has dutifully started referring to them in the manner that Bush does. They call them personal accounts. So private accounts is disappearing, and now you'll just hear them talking about personal accounts.
Right, but that's just a prettier word. And when in effect, somebody who did a lot more research than I did on the subject told me that, and this may be a subjective thing, but after you make $80,000,
yeah,
you quit paying into Social Security.
That's right. That's called the payroll tax. I think it's up to $90,000 now. And all the problems with Social Security that are fairly minor and as much as almost 50 years away could all be solved simply by having no cap on payroll taxes. That means that, I think the median income is like $36,000. So if you're making $90,000, that brings you up probably to, the 80 or 85th percentile of income in this country. But these people that are making $1 million a year, $10 million a year. They don't pay any payroll tax beyond $90,000. In fact, what I would think, it ought to be the other way around, that nobody should pay payroll tax until they make over $50,000 a year and have it gradually go up and have the bulk of all of that paid by the millionaires.
Exactly. But, Peter, here is my biggest concern with this country right now. I'm pretty much looking at Bush like he wants to go back to monarchy. Like he wants there to be poor people and he wants there to be royalty. He wants to eliminate the middle class altogether, and that scares the crap out of me.
Well, it should. And I think we're on the way to that. All right, Susan, thank you very much. Appreciate you calling. Also in Troy, here's Tom. Tom, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Good night. So strident. I mean, is there any room to meet in the middle here? Some of us are not really extremist Republicans. If anything, I'd probably consider myself more libertarian in orientation. But I take it what you're saying is there's really no problem with Social Security. I think that, frankly, I didn't really have any problem with the idea, you said, letting the payroll tax just be without ceiling. But the philosophical problem of setting up a social system based on a temporary demographic, which is what we had at the time, and in fact kind of colors some of what's happening in the Middle East in the way that Lebanon was carved out based on a temporary demographic. And
well, you're totally losing me, Tom. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the fact that Social Security's number of workers, of course, I mean, you know this, is just the basics that are going to be paying into the system, and this pay-as-you-go system are going to be dropping while the retirees are going to be increasing.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers were totally different then, yet the system was set up just like the marriage penalty for a temporary demographic situation, for instance, where women weren't really working. It would be an advantage to get married and have your taxes lowered if that was the social situation in everyone's household, but it's not now. And that's the same with Social Security. Something needs to be done, and frankly, you have to be forced between the elderly or the young children. I don't think, philosophically speaking here, we think that there's any real choice there, do we?
Well, it's sort of odd that in the wealthiest country in the world that we're even talking about this. I mean, where's all this wealth going? I mean, one thing, it's going down this rat hole of military expenditures and this overextension of the empire, which has crashed all big empires in the past. But, again, we're the wealthiest country in the world, and we're talking about one of the key safety nets and one of the few remaining safety nets going bankrupt.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of which safety net, as long as there is a good one.
Yeah.
And the you're thinking it should be in the context of Social Security the way it's set up now. As of now, the people that get screwed the worst are African Americans, because you can't bequeath any of your Social Security, really. And once you die, and they tend to die earlier, unfortunately, it's a whole other story. There's nothing to bequeath. At least this is going to be able to go to your kids. And really, in the beginning, there's no way.
Well, in the beginning, there isn't going to be anything for anybody alive, because all of any money that is produced by these private accounts are going to go back to pay for the benefit reductions, to pay for the administrative costs, to pay the debt service on the hundreds of billions of dollars of further debt that's going to be incurred. This is a con game, Tom.
This is a different subject you're talking about, though. Philosophically speaking, these accounts are meant to be literally yours, and for yours to bequeath to your family. And
well, you know, on one hand, it may sound good, but what this does, it's an insurance program. It's not an investment program. And there was a social decision made back in our grandparents' generation that we didn't want to have a repeat of what occurred during the Great Depression. That up until then, when people that when they aged, they had to depend on their family. They had to go to the poorhouse or some other humiliating result of rather than being respected as elders in our society. And it works, and it works just fine. And there doesn't appear to be any particular way that money can be invested in private accounts that is going to reward anyone living in any substantial way. And it's more has to be seen, I think, as part of this right-wing ideological agenda to destroy public, the whole concept. You're talking about philosophically, the whole concept of a community caring for itself. Under the conservative philosophy, every man for himself. Well, I don't think it works real well like that. All right, I got to go. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. It was 11:30. We got to almost take a break. But I just wanted to, I was going to read this kind of as a joke, but let me just read this to you. I was talking about reading the New York Times. Here's a New York Times article from September 4th, 1967. It's written by Peter Gross. It says, U.S. encouraged by Vietnam vote. Officials cite 83% turnout despite Viet Cong terror. And again, 1967. United States officials were surprised and heartened today at the size of the turnout in South Vietnam's presidential election despite a Viet Cong terrorist campaign to disrupt the voting. Tell me if this sounds familiar at all. According to reports from Saigon, 83% of the 5.85 million registered voters cast their ballots yesterday. Many of them risked reprisals threatened by the Viet Cong. The size of the popular vote and the inability of the Viet Cong to destroy the election machinery were the two salient facts in a preliminary assessment of the nation election based on the incomplete returns reaching here. Does that sound familiar? Of course, now the estimates, what were they talking about, 57% or something like that in Iraq, and now they're beginning to drop it. Cities like Mosul may have had like a 10% turnout or something of to that effect. Looks like there could very well be an Islamic government. Many of the people voting for a government that will tell the U.S. to get out. And I don't know if I ever finished my thought earlier about talking about U.S. having no exit strategy because they do not intend to exit. Right now, the United States is talking about building 14 permanent bases in Iraq. Again, this is going to cost hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars. Cut taxes on the rich, create private accounts that is going to increase the debt by hundreds of billions of dollars. What I forgot the figures already, $2 trillion or something over 20 years, and spend $1.2 billion on the Iraqi embassy, the most expensive in the world. Does anybody really think that Bushko intends to get out of Iraq? I'm stumbling there because I almost said Vietnam. Because that election in Vietnam was 1967. Think how many people died between then and 1972.
Your opinion matters.
Call 313. There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday. As I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's true. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do this. I've never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to... drop that in ASAP. I found out it's too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh.
Oh, I feel like and I'm going to call the 10 Mike Clark next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Mike in the morning. Broadcast
on the Riff. 101-101.
Riff.
Rocks.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite Riff tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City call at 33 on the Riff lines.
Just like that. You could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The Riff tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
Make
your request.
Win cool riff gear.
And schmooze with the Nova.
It's your all-request riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur T.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
Twice.
Is
nice. Here's Tuesday on the Riff.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday.
Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday
for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your boy?
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff.
From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
It really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
Riff.
Your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Sky.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
Where you get locked up for it, like especially against hard drugs, against like cocaine and things.
Well, all right, Raphael, thank you. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. And here's our next caller. It's Jimmy. Jimmy's calling in from Brownstown, Michigan. Hey, you're on the air.
Hi. Peter, this is the first time I caught your show. I was on the way home from my brother-in-law's house from Super Bowl. I'm a very low middle-class person. I work very hard. I'm a diesel mechanic. I'm 31 years old. I have two beautiful little daughters and a wife. My wife stays home, and every year it gets harder and harder for my wife to stay home to
sure.
take care of my kids.
Well, that's
every year.
That's amazing that she's staying home because we can't afford that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. My wife, I mean, she actually went out and got a job after my first daughter was born, and it actually cost me more money in taxes. They have her work. They wasn't taking enough for federal. She's bringing home $100 a week of working, you know, 20, 25 hours at a store. And, I mean, she worked hard. I'm not, you know, I loved her. And I told her, I said, you know, it is more cheaper for me to go out here and try to get a job to work my butt off. I mean, I'm working 60 hours a week to bring home enough money to keep her home and keep my kids dressed and fed.
Now, that's insane. In the richest country in the world, why are things falling like that? I mean,
I don't, and that's what I was just saying. You know, now they're sending me letters in the mail saying that when I turn 67, I'm eligible for Social Security. And I'm like, you know, first of all, if I'm going to live to be that age, second of all, now they're telling me that it's not going to be there.
Well, Jimmy, let me just put your mind at ease. It is going to be there. There is not a Social Security crisis. The any problems with it, like the, you know, there's been shortfalls projected in the past since the 1930s, and it was simply adjusted by tax increases. And
but if I, you know, I do have a I do work for a union shop. And
that's good.
Thank God I have a pension, and I make sure I'm vested and I'm in there. But the problem is like. They don't contribute to my 401k. I still put money in, whatever penny I can scrape off to put in a 401k, because there's no way I'm going to be able to live off of the $1,500, $1,600 a month or whatever I'll be getting when I retire. Hopefully it's a lot more back, you know, I got another 20 years to go. But, I mean, we're trying to start a small business maybe and try to go out and work on our own. But like you were just saying, how can you afford health insurance when they want $800 a month?
I know.
For you and your family?
A friend of mine has his own small business. He and his wife pay $1,000 a month for health care. Well, every other, you know, maybe I should start talking. I was going to start talking about health and health care and what have you. You know, in France now, there's all these demonstrations going on because the government is trying to raise the work week from 35 hours a week to 38. And the whole sector of the working class, both white collar and blue collar, are saying, no, what we want is to be rewarded in a manner that's consistent with the level of profits that are being made so we can enjoy our lives. I mean, 60 hours a week. Jimmy, we're talking 19th century here. That's what people used to work in the 19th century.
I mean, I am a diesel mechanic. I am on the side of the freeway changing drive lines. You don't. I mean, it's not a sit down at a job. I mean, I wish I can go to college. I swear to God, I wish I could have stayed. I did graduate high school. Thank God, I was not gonna quit that. But my profession and my where I had five brothers and sisters, and my family just could not afford to send me to college. And my grades was not good enough, but I did my best, and I married my high school sweetheart. We've been together for 15 years. I'm 31 years old. We've been married for 12. We've been together 15. I have a 9-year-old and a 2.5, and I work my fingers to the bone so my kids can have a decent living and a good chance in this life. But, you know, it's discouraging that I got to work 60 hours a week. But here I see a guy that's been, you know, to me, they're rich because they're sitting at the big three. I hear stories. You're always going to hear stories about guys that work 40 hours a week, and they bring home more than I do in 60. And, I mean, they're no better than me, but for some reason they had a family member come in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, I mean, I just keep posing that. We keep saying we're the wealthiest country in the world.
And we have children starving in our own streets. And I love Jay Leno for raffling off a bike for the tsunami. And, yes, everybody needs help. But, you know, we have people in our own streets starving. And here, this president that we elect, and I did vote for Kerry. I would hope so.
I can't imagine why.
This is our first year we have ever voted because we felt that this is the best one to vote for. We needed a change, and I honestly believe that American voted for the wrong, but that's my opinion. And being American, I have my right to my opinion.
Well, we voted
for the wrong president.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, Jimmy, my wife and I, for the first time in our lives, voted for it. We never voted for a Republican, but never voted for a Democrat either. Always voted for these small parties because I wasn't very fond of either of the two parties. But this time, you know, like almost all of our neighbors, we all said, and that was the problem. We all voted against Bush. The Democrats could never get their stuff together enough to have a candidate that's actually attractive. You know, let me do this, though, Jimmy. I really appreciate you calling in, and let me just get some of the stuff that I was going to anyways about healthcare on the air. If you still can do it, give a listen. All right?
I'm listening.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Bye. You know, I get so angry when I hear calls like that. And you know, there's tens of millions of the Jimmys in the world, people working their butt off. And listen to that language, working his fingers to the bone. Why should people in this society or in any society have to work their fingers to the bone when there's hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars of wealth that are taken from those worn fingers and going to this small percentage of ruling class greedy people that would do anything they do anything they can to create more and more wealth at the expense of people in this country and around the world? All right, here is what the new Secretary of Health and Human Services Leavitt said. He introduced Mr. Bush as someone who had improved quality health care for millions. This is January 28th. This is what Leavitt said, that Bush has improved quality health care for millions. Now, they're to the point where they can say anything. They can make up any lie no matter how monstrous, and people will believe it. The way that, you know, Dick Cheney continues to say that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. Everyone with half a brain knows that that's BS, but this has continued to be repeated. The whole thing about weapons of mass destruction and now these lies about Social Security. They think of us as such a pack of morons that they can say anything. I mean, I don't know whether they actually laugh at us and give each other high fives the way when you fooled somebody. I mean, what kind of people want to fool people to begin with, let alone when it's life and death? Anyways. So this is what Secretary Leavitt of Health and Human Services says, that Bush has improved quality health care for millions. Here's the facts from the New York Times in a few months before, August 26th. The number of Americans living in poverty rose by 1.3 million last year to 35.9 million. So there's 36 million poor people in this country. Lots of them kids, the majority of them children, majority of them white. Yeah, sometimes, forget it. The majority of poor represent the majority of the largest ethnic group in this country, Euro-Americans. Now, that, too, is government figures, 36 million people. Most people in the middle class, like myself, probably when I looked when I see what the statistics are, how they figure out who's in poverty, I would double that easily. And I would think that the people that are making $21,000 a year and not considered poor probably would say, you know what, if I'm not considered poor, I sure feel like one. What about health care? Those without health insurance climbed by $1.4 million to 45 million people. So there's 45 million people in this country without health care, and there's tens of millions more without adequate health care, which I'll come to in a minute. So what happens in the wealthiest country in the world, the best country in the world, the number one country in the world, as we're always told? And I ask people to please call me and tell me what of the social statistics, other than the biggest military, are we number one in? I mean, we got the richest people. We're number one in that. But in terms of every social index of what makes for a good human society, we ain't number one, folks. And Bush is driving us down the drain even further. Now, here, this incredible story in the Detroit News that says, this is from Grand Rapids, Michigan. The city's black babies are dying at a rate that is the highest of Michigan's big cities and three times the rate of the city's white infants. Grand Rapids has one of the highest infant mortality rates in Michigan, more than Detroit, says Carolyn Pyle, executive director of the Grand Rapids African American Health Institute. Infant mortality means a child dies before they're 1 year old. 1 year old, right? So this means that when we're really watching our kids and getting them to the doctors and all that, these kids are dying at an incredible rate. In Grand Rapids, the infant mortality rate for 2001 to 2003 was 22.4 for black babies, 7.5 for white babies. Now, let's remember both these figures. It's three times that for African-American babies as for Euro-American babies. 22.4 and 7.5. Well, good old Internet. I went to the World Wide Web, looked up world infant mortality rates. So you would think that the best country in the world, the number one country in the world, would be number one, or maybe two or three, or maybe four or five, or six or seven, or eight or nine, or 10 or 11, or 12, you know, I don't know. The United States is 35th in the world in terms of infant mortality rates at 6.75 per thousand. Japan, Sweden, Iceland, etc. are way ahead of us, are all the European countries. Why? Because every single one of them has a national health program where people, the citizens of that country, receive health care as a matter of right of being a citizen. Here, tens of millions of people, because they can't afford it. And, you know, the cruel among you, the heartless among you, are thinking right now, too bad, why don't they get a job and get some, you know, get retrained and all that. Well, this society is filled with tens of millions of jobs that don't pay what's necessary to be able to get health insurance, or the job doesn't come with it. And those jobs are permanent. It's not like everybody can get a better education and then leave those jobs. Those jobs got to be filled. Someone's got to do that work. So this society counts on poor people. It creates a caste system, not just a class system, but a caste system. It ensures that there will always be, even if you believe the government figures, 36 million poor people in this society, because they're necessary socially and economically. Michigan's 2000 rate was 8.2, which then, and the Grand Rapids total, 22.4, that puts that city along side of Suriname, the Philippines, and North Korea. So we have people living in our state, and it's not much lower in Detroit. So there's people that are listening to this broadcast that are living in areas that virtually have third world health standards. We're not number one. We're lucky to be number 35, and if you live in Grand Rapids, I forgot what that puts you down to. All these bankruptcies that are going on. Sometimes it, according to the New York Times a couple days ago, all it takes is one bad fall for a working person with health insurance to be pushed into bankruptcy. Hundreds of thousands of Americans file for personal bankruptcy each year because of medical bills, according to this Harvard University studies. The study, which was scheduled to appear on the website of Health Affairs, provides a glimpse into a little research area connecting bankruptcy and medical costs. That's how bad it is. Well, this came in, too. just as we were talking about this. This is from Ann, writes into calltalkyes at yahoo.com. Hello, Peter. You're talking about how other countries have health care and poor people aren't thrown out on the street. I just wanted to say that I'm from Canada and I'm a student. Just this week, I was feeling crappy, so I got my health card and walked into a health clinic and was able to get checked out for free. I don't know how it works in the States, but here at least I know that I am covered and I don't have to worry about student debt with the added bonus of monstrous medical bills. Yay for health cards. All right. I got more, but let's... again, we're the wealthiest country in the world. We're not even afforded basic health care as a matter of right. Here's Keith listening in Livonia. Keith, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, my complaint is you just had that diesel mechanic on, and he's union. You want to talk what's killing health care and killing everything else is the union.
That's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
How do you figure it's nuts?
Well, because I've had a union health plan, which is the best health plan that I've ever had, that it statistically, union workers have better health benefits than anybody else, including middle-class white-collar workers. How do you even figure this?
Why do they deserve it? I know I have a couple friends that are union. They do the same job every day. They put the same part on the same engine, same car, whatever. I'm skilled. I work on cars. I diagnose. I fix them. And I'm paying much more than them for health care. I'm skilled. They're not.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not a matter of skills. It's a matter of we all deserve the kind of health care they have. And see, that's what's wrong with this country. It's based on the politics of resentment. And rather than being mad at a government that wastes our money on wars and giving it away to the wealthy, you resent people that are in a union that have accomplished what you should have.
No. Back in the day, I could have taken a union job. I could have got in with my buddy. I could be union. I did not want the same thing every day. I wanted something different every day.
So what are you complaining about? You made your choice.
Well, I made my choice. When I made that choice, I was 19 years old. Now that I've grown older and I've learned my skill, I mean, you could teach a monkey to do what most guys do in the factory.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. But, you know, it's not a matter of what you do. Everybody does socially important work. I mean, there's work that pays $5.75 an hour, and that person deserves full health care. Full health care benefits the way any big three UAW worker does. And without that person, you don't get your burgers. You don't get stuff swept up. You don't do 101 little nasty jobs that the minimum wage workers are providing.
Okay, how do you get that UAW big three job anymore?
Well,
I mean, honestly, in hindsight, I wish I would have taken it.
Well, they're leaving. The jobs are going elsewhere. What can I tell you? But, you know, there are, Keith, groups and even union projects that don't have anything to do with just union members that are fighting for health care for everybody. And as long as we're just going to sit back and take it as individuals rather than doing what people have done throughout American history, they've gotten together and created change, we're just going to keep eating it. It's that simple. Speaking of economics, I got to take a break right now. Thank you. And right back after these.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Kambati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Kambati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Kambati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City color 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Oh my God. Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Yes,
your chance to take control of the WRIF playlist. With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock. With Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9.
On 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station.
Rock Station. Rock Station. Rock Station.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well,
and
you're
I don't
just
wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
Well, it's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man, what do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No,
you can't
never.
Just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans, some boots.
I don't do that.
No?
No. Nope.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all,
but he sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas off your ass. Ha, ha.
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning.
Yes, the broadcast
on the Riff.
101.1
WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
And now, the Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday
on the Riff.
All day Thursday
from your walk right in free station.
101 The Riff.
Lowest in 60 years. Now, there's also another email here from Jacob in, So he's listening in Finland. And he says, I was truly amazed that anyone in the richest country in the world has to work 60 hours a week to make ends meet. That was Jimmy who was calling to say that. That's what he had to do. He said he was working his fingers to the bone as a diesel mechanic. He says, I worked in Finland a maximum 37 and a half hours per week. I worked extra doing things I like and got paid for it as pocket money. I'm 62 and in great health. I have retired and will have enough money till my dying day with my pension. So also my wife, who spent most of her life bringing up the family at 65, my and her pension will further increase. As a senior, I pay 50% for my train journeys and air journeys in Finland. I have the best free medical care I need, include free help to keep me fit, and I enjoy lots of other benefits. I'm not even a Finnish citizen. Where are you from? Are you from the United States, Jacob? I wonder why you were always in listening to this broadcast. Tell me you're from Detroit, because a lot of people listen from around the world. He says, but I've earned this because I worked and earned my retirement here. So that's what other countries have. We are an absolute disgrace. Let me see. Is this truck out there listening? No, the truck just parked in front. I was going to say, honk your horn if you're listening. Dave's listening in Germany. He wrote into Call Talk, yes, and Yahoo.com. Oh, this is about legalizing drugs. I was listening to your discussion last week about legalizing drugs. Drug offenses here in Germany are not a big deal. Thus, the drug problem is rarely even discussed in the media. Americans, on the other hand, love to control people, prohibit things, and tell others what to do. But this seems to be only a symptom of America's greatest problem, Puritanism. And that's, you know, that's the right wing. All these damn busybodies that want to tell us how to live our lives, right? All right, let's go back to our phones. Got to click a few little things here, and that brings up James listening in Mount Clemens. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Doing good.
I had a few things I want to say, but one is the healthcare. I got to agree. I don't have, I'm probably, what, 45 million, and I'm that one other person that doesn't have healthcare.
Wow.
And that's just because, I mean, I could pay for it if I wanted to, but I guess I'm risking it on my own, you know, that I'm in reasonably good health and so forth. But in reference to what Jimmy said about working 60 hours and so forth, why is he working 60 hours to get by? What are his expenses like? You know, I know nowadays people are more concerned with their leisurely activities and their unnecessary expenses. They're getting themselves into a hole. They're using their credit card. So it's
right.
Not, I'm very, let's see, skeptical when people tell me, like, you know, I work really hard just to get by. Well, what do they got? Two cell phone bills, the house phone, the internet, the cable, the, you know, and it all adds up. And
well, I agree. There is a consumption level here that's taken for granted. And, I mean, if we decided my wife and I were talking one time. It was, if it came down to it, we could probably live okay on $20,000 a year, which would mean we'd never go out to eat. We'd probably never go to movies. We wouldn't have a cell phone. We'd have one used car and on and on. But but there is an expectation on the part of Americans, which is taken for granted, by the way, of Europeans, that they're not going to live on the margins. Tens of millions of Americans have put their economic future in jeopardy by using a credit card to make up the difference between what they earn and what they feel is necessary for consumption for a middle class lifestyle. I agree with you.
Yeah, it kills me because, I mean, and one of the biggest things is, you know, we're probably, what, the fattest population on the planet?
Yeah.
And I bring that because, you know, I'm on a diet right now just because I'm trying to watch my weight, or more, let's call it a nutritional health system of some type. But in doing that, I can't believe the amount of money I'm saving not going out to lunch every day or going out to dinner. So I think another big problem that people are not, because they have to eat, they don't necessarily consider it expenses, but there's probably everybody probably weighs $500 to $1,000 a month just in the miscellaneous crap they buy on food. So, I mean, I think if people just focused more on their spending habits, I mean, it'd be so much better. Now, I agree, you know, we're America. We should be able to enjoy all these luxuries.
Well, it's also then becomes really a class thing that there's going to be a increasingly small sector of the population that's going to be able to consume at the level that we associate with an American middle-class lifestyle. And the rest of us are then going to be asked to be extraordinarily disciplined. Well, I'll tell you, if everyone consumed at the level that particularly I did, but that I do, but even my wife and I do, together, the economy would be in bad shape because we're not much consumers. We don't have a lot of gadgets. We actually have, she does, has a cell phone. I don't have one. And, I don't do much with gadgets or very expensive clothes or anything like that. But the economy depends on being driven by consumerism.
Yeah, well, I agree. I'm not a big shopper myself. So, and I understand it takes, you know, I own my own business. So, you know, I know how the cycle works, and to make money and so forth, you depend on customers and whatnot. But, I would have to say that I think where the biggest, the waste, I think, is probably, not, I use credit card example, but let's maybe a mortgage, maybe expenses that are money ultimately flushing down the toilet. You know, if you look at your yearly budget of what you spend and you find out you end up spending, what, $2,000, $3,000 in credit card expenses, maybe another X amount on mortgage or mm-hmm. wasted money, I think, you know, who makes money? You know, if you look at those expenses, who ends up making that money? These big, not necessarily Halliburton, but these big mortgage companies that I want to say probably aren't.
Well, sure. But, I mean, I was just thinking, one of the things that I do, my wife and I go out to breakfast every single Sunday, and it routinely, with the tip, comes to like $18, $19. Call it $20. That's $1,000 a year. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like much when you're spending it, but yeah. But what we're talking about doing, another, to have some fiscal discipline, which I do agree that people should have, and not max themselves out on credit cards and then borrowing against that on their like house mortgage or something. But you're asking people to diminish the quality of their life all the more. When, in a society where everything is based, the quality of life seems to be based around consumption. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. It's Peter Werbe here with you. And our next caller is Jeff from Redford. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
What's up? Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about, since President Bush is supposed to be a Christian, which you, I don't believe that for a minute, but, he says the rich people aren't going to go to heaven until they give up all their riches, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, they've never been willing to do that. In fact, they've always been trying to figure out how they can get more and more wealth. And there's only a finite, at any given moment, there's a finite amount of wealth. So it's always a matter of how is it distributed. And in this society, it's getting more and more disproportionately maldistributed to the benefit of the ultra-wealthy.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't trust them because, you know, if rich people, you can't trust them, you know. It's like, you know, they got all the money, you ain't got none, you know what I'm saying? It's like, how are you going to trust them when, because you have to have a chance to obtain some wealth, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
in any society.
Well, I agree. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let me see. Paul writes in, I've heard that Social Security would begin to pay out more than it takes in somewhere down the line, like the government has for the last 4 years. Does that mean the government needs to be fixed now or somewhere down the line? Right, you are. I understand that idea. All right, let's take another call here. It's Jim from Pontiac. Jim, hi, Peter Werbe, you're on the air.
Yeah, part of what this is all about is Social Security, they withhold 6.2% from your check every week.
Right.
Okay, the employers also pay 6.2%. The employers want to get out from underneath this.
Uh-huh. Tell me more.
You know, and that 6.2%, they can keep in their own pocket, and they're not going to give it to you for your 401k or nothing. They're just going to keep it in their own pocket and be quiet about it. There was an article in the paper the other day where the manufacturers and major employers in the country have got together and made a organization or an association that is lobbying for this.
Isn't it sweet? You know, that's the thing. You have to pay so much attention. See, I mean, I appreciate you bringing that to mind because I didn't even know that part of it. But, you know, when these guys start talking, they start talking about how much they care for the common man and woman. You just got to, particularly in this case, reach for your wallet because you know that they're going to just grab it. And they've had such a good history of not having to pay the consequences of any of their terrible mistakes. I mean, they got, well, I don't know if I want to say reelected, but got put back in office. And they could say, well, gee, we can say or do anything. I think that's the message.
Yeah, that's all I got to say about
it. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And here is Sandy and Taylor. Sandy, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Yeah, I've just got a rhyme for you tonight. Let's leave it at that.
A rhyme, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Two Satas sitting in D.C., K-I-L-L-I-N-G. First comes Texas executions, then comes Iraq, Abu Ghraib, George Bush, Alberto Gonzalez. You're putting many U.S. and world citizens in an early grave.
Did you write that?
I was going to put this on the back of my truck on Inauguration Day, and I never made it out of the house. I was going to put it on a poster.
All right. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, you're welcome.
I appreciate it. That was pretty good. It's kind of dropped the meter. You know, you got to have, anyways, you know what that is in poetry, right? You do, you don't. Here's Jake in Highland Park. Jake, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about what you said about how the Republicans were wasting money on wars.
Sure.
Do you believe that freedom is good?
Do I believe freedom is good?
Yes.
Yeah? How about you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Not want to be in Iraq, then.
You wouldn't want to be in Iraq. No, neither would I.
We would.
We would what?
Yes. How afraid do you think people were under Saddam Hussein?
Well, why did the United States back Saddam Hussein then when he was doing all these awful deeds?
Are you talking about against Iran?
No, no. Well, that...
when did they back him other than that?
Well, he was our ally. We gave him all this intelligence information. Secretary of War Rumsfeld brought him a pair of golden spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're not going to find any freedom there. Thank you. We got a next. Oh, yeah. Sorry, you had it right up there. Roth Dizzy, I haven't even given you credit. Jay Hudson, all people making this show go from behind the scenes. Here's Dave in Sterling Heights. Dave, hi, you're on the air.
How you doing, Pete? I have a response to Keith about the unions.
Sure.
Okay, number one, power in numbers. Everybody in my union, Local 636, pays into this insurance for us to have a little bit better insurance, and I understand that single people like that, there's nobody there behind them.
Right. Go ahead.
So it's not the union's fault. It's just that we are power in numbers that are, you know, we got a little bit better health insurance because of it. The other thing, too, is that, you know, the person at 60 hours a week, I can understand it. I'm doing it myself probably because of the reason why my daughter, who's 22, doesn't have insurance. She's not covered under mine. So I have to work those extra hours to cover her. And for her to get a better job, I have to pay for her college. So it's not because of somebody's expenditures or what they're paying. What are they paying for, especially if it's for their children?
Right. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because as I was saying that about how people conceivably could live on a lot less, but why should they be forced to? But I was thinking that as well. Things like people want to make sure that their child is going to have like a college education. And college, think about what it was when we were like college age compared to what it is now. I mean, I mean some of these colleges,
yeah, totally right.
They're like $30,000 a year if you're going to live there on campus.
And how many of those kids can afford to do it? How many kids can afford the books? How many kids can afford if they get sick or the dorm or anything like that? That comes from my pocket so that she can get a better life, so that she can sustain herself.
Yeah, you're absolutely,
you know,
right.
And then when you're talking about Iraq and you know, the United States, number one, the United States has a separation of church and state. In Iraq, no, it's intertwined. I was there. I was there from 1984 until 1992. The separation of church and state does not happen in Iraq because the religion is so intertwined into their everyday life that the United States just doesn't understand the concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're looking at that.
What were you doing over there?
I was in the Navy.
Oh.
I was on the command ship USS Coronado, so we were out of Bahrain, we were out of Qatar. So I got to see the different countries that are over there, and one reason why they don't like us is because of the fact that we are a very arrogant people. And they get that from what do they see on the TV and the music. So all that does come back at us because they see a small segment of what they're like on the TV, which gives them a different viewpoint of what it's truly like to be in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm working out of Local 636 down at the trash burner. We had set up, or they were going to remodel the precipitators. You know, you're talking about the pollution in
right.
Detroit. Well, the wealthy, once Bush got in there, the person that's in charge and the money that's being generated for that, because Bush got in there and he whacked all those programs, well, now that job that was going to come to us was wiped from the books. They don't have to worry about it anymore because the EPA's standards had changed once Bush got into office.
Yeah,
and he's doing it nationwide.
What was his name? Robert Kennedy Jr., who has this national show about the environment, talks, and most of us don't realize that the Bush administration has repealed, by executive order, over 400 environmental regulations that have been developed over the last 30, 40 years, including by Republican presidents.
You're absolutely right. And the other thing, too, is that how many of the American people are educated enough to understand what's going on? Do they watch the news? Well, no offense, but the news is kind of biased to who's ever in charge or who's ever flitting the bill.
That's right.
Again, with the newspapers, here again, too. Who owns the newspapers? Who's paying in the advertisements? Well, now, who are they going to side with? So now where do you get the true information that people need to listen to? You're on at 12 o'clock at night. Why aren't you on at like 6 o'clock in the morning or in the prime time hours so that people can actually hear what's going on?
Yeah, well, they've got it boxed up pretty good.
Yeah.
All
well,
right.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. I don't know the answer to this one. I don't even want to say who it is. Wrote in, every time I get a job or go to school, this is from a woman. Every time I get a job or go to school around Michigan, they accuse me of some sexual deviance. What's going on? I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that one. Oh, I can't even tell you why. I'm just reading an email. Call me. Hey, you listening, she says. You sound great. The last guy. This is why unions are so important. A living wage and benefits. Cripe, shaking my head as always. All right. all right. Where are we here? Okay, I got the wrong screen up on here. That's why I can't see where I'm supposed to go next. Here we go. It's Susie in Dearborn Heights. Hi, Susie. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I'm glad you're not on at 6 in the morning because then I'd never hear you.
I can't imagine that.
Me either.
You know what morning, you know, like Drew and Mike here on WRIF and other people, you know what time they often get up? 3:30, quarter to 4, 4 o'clock. That's when I want to go to bed.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm calling about is, since we're on the health care issue, I tuned in late, so I really didn't hear the beginning. But I'm involved in a class action lawsuit against the state of Michigan.
Really?
Through the Michigan Legal Services.
Mm-hmm.
And we're suing the state of Michigan for health care because I guess I'm not exactly real clear on how it's going, but according to the lawyer, Gary Benjamin, it says something in the Michigan Constitution about covering everybody equally with health care.
Uh-huh.
And so we're suing them, me and a bunch of other people in some different groups. And it's going. It's filed. So hopefully something will happen, even if it just gets people talking about it.
Well, I'll tell you, I believe, in fact, I was just going to say that, I think that is essentially going to be the effect of it, is start creating this kind of this critical mass to bring this to people's attention. And that's what I want to do, too, is I want to keep putting this on the political agenda, that rather than spending $80 billion like Bush wants for more, you know, for more money for Iraq, or listen to this, Susie. The top U.S. commander in Baghdad is facing a budget gap of at least $4 billion between what Halliburton Company, remember Halliburton?
Oh,
Dick
yeah.
Cheney's company says it will cost to provide services for U.S. troops for a year and what the government has budgeted. In other words, their subsidiary, Kellogg Brown and Root, which provides stuff like food and mail and telephones and all that, they submitted an estimate to the Pentagon. And then it turns out that it's about almost it's more than this, $6 billion. So what's the response? The Army has been trimming its request to close the gap. So in other words, they're giving the soldiers less because Halliburton is gouging us more. And this is where our money's going. It's going to Halliburton rather than to health care for Susie and the people that need it.
Well, see, that's why, was it Norway they were talking about?
Finland.
Now, Finland, that's why they can afford to do what they do, because they're not financing a war.
Yeah, or financing wars, financing troops in 70 different countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Susie, thank you. Good luck.
Okay.
Keep us informed on the lawsuit.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, also, remember last week I told you about these robot troops for Iraq? The U.S. military is going to deploy these robots armed with machine guns to wage war against the insurgents. Hey, what a great idea. Won't have to risk any of our troops anymore. Although I said it was like the Terminator series when these war robots started taking on a life of their own and started destroying not just the enemy, but destroying all humans. That was sort of the basic plot of it all. And I reported that last week. But who's making these? The Foster Miller Company, which is a joint venture between the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense and the U.S.-based holding company Carlyle Group. Carlisle Group? Now, I would hope that at least 50% of you are going, oh, my God, it all becomes clearer. This is the front-end loading of the racket. Now, the Carlisle Group, in part, is owned by George Bush's father. So when George Sr. dies, the money that he has invested, the wealth accumulated, is going to go to George Bush Sr. So when he, as commander-in-chief, is ordering weapons of war, which are made by Foster Miller, he's essentially paying himself. So it's it's front-end loading of the racket, where the Carlisle Groups and other war munitions makers destroy Iraq. And you know, a few casualties along the way of Iraqis and Americans, but what the hell. And then the rear-end loading of it, that's Halliburton, where they clean up the mess, and we pay for that as well. So that's the symmetry of it. It's a perfect little deal there. All right, let's go back to our call. 313-298-WRIF. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com if you want to email. And my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. If you want to take part in a chat room that's going on right now, if someone is doing that, I mean, I guess the host is supposed to take part in the chat room, too. I don't know how Tom Hartman, where you go to TomHartman.com and get on it, TomHartman.com, and get involved in the chat room. I don't know how he takes care of that, too. I got email. I got to take these calls. If you think I'm slighting you, it's because I just can't figure it out. Not so much mechanically or technologically, but my brain can't wrap around another source of communication. If Tom can do it, all power to him. All right, here's Andrew in Royal Oak. Hi, Andrew. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Glad to.
Hey, I was driving home and just listening to one of your callers called in and seemed to question or at least having a problem with accumulating wealth. And I was just kind of curious as your opinions, why is accumulating wealth such a bad thing? And don't you think people who accumulate wealth are putting or at least trying to put some of that wealth back into the economy?
Well, that's what Walmart has been trying to say in kind of its public service announcement. No, they usually don't. They're usually talking about how can they what occurs, unless there's controls, government controls on wealth, is it's a system of institutionalized looting. So you had, during the 19th century, you had this great concentration of wealth. By 1900, it was called, by many observers, a plutocracy, the rule of the rich, that wealth so dominated public policy in every regard is that democracy was almost a sham. That the workers worked regularly 60 hours a week under horrid conditions. Children as young as 8 worked 12 hours a day. I think I said safety and health conditions were horrible. Pay was minimal. And it was only through one, organizing by workers themselves, but also through the intervention of governments for health and safety standards, the Meats Act, the Child Labor Act, all of this. And every point along the way, conservatives said this is going to destroy the economy, that we're going to wind up in a terrible situation. And so what is decided, pardon me, in countries like in Europe, is that that's capitalism. So you're gonna have an upper and ruling class, but we're not going to have it so that it's at a scandalous level the way it is here. That there is so much money accrued to the high side that it necessitates people making tens of millions of people making terrible wages, don't have to struggle to get by, and don't have decent health care.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're definitely right that there's definitely room for improvement.
Yeah.
And I think that when the organizations formed their unions, labor unions and whatnot, it was for a good cause. And since then, improvements have been made in health conditions and such. But I still am a true believer in the American way, and I think that I'm a business owner, and I know that I treat my employees well, and they're provided with all the standard health care and everything and all the things that are important to each and every American, and they get paid well for their work, and I think that things are getting better, and I think that it just seems like
things aren't getting better. There's more poor people, more people don't have health insurance. There's a tremendous trade deficit. The country is in deficit. On and on and on. We pay taxes and get damn little back for it compared to what, say, European countries do.
But the conditions of our standards of living are far better than any other country in the world.
I don't know what would make you say that or believe that. We have one of the worst standards of living of any of the industrialized countries. Have you ever been to... to some extent, we're like the old countries. Probably the only one that even comes close to us are like England. But the northern Scandinavian countries, France, places like that, people by law work 35 hours a week. By law, they're granted a month's vacation. There's national health programs. There's not another. We have the highest percentage of poor population in the world. The least amount of people covered by health insurance. The most workers spend the most time on the job than any country in the Western industrial countries. Okay, hearing nothing. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Got to be quick. It's radio. You could look. If it's television, you can have a reflective look, but not in this. Here's John from Ypsilanti. John, hi, it's Peter Werby. Hey, do you know where did Ypsilanti get its name?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you.
What do you think?
I'm thinking possibly Japanese.
Most people say Native American. Ypsilanti was a Greek general. All right, go ahead.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually, I was kind of thinking I'd probably be more like your last call, but I'm thinking about, everything that's been said tonight. About what everybody's been saying, everybody's upset, and I know that Michigan voted for John Kerry, but how come there's never any talk about impeaching this guy? Why can't we oust this guy out of office?
There is. I mean, I don't think there's. I think that for one thing, there's two things, what they call malfeasance, which means you purposely did something wrong, and misfeasance, which means you made a mistake, an error. The grounds for impeachment are high crimes and misdemeanors. The fact that the misfeasance, or even some would say it was malfeasance, but the misfeasance over September 11th, that the architects of our failure, the most catastrophic failure of American intelligence since Pearl Harbor, not only allowed that to occur by not seeing every sign that was, it was almost like Bin Laden sent a note saying on September 11th we're going to fly planes into the World Trade Center, that the person that responsible for national security gets promoted to Secretary of State is absolutely incredible. But in terms of malfeasance, I think that the lies which are going to come out in our lifetimes, purposeful lies about weapons of mass destruction, is the basis of an impeachment which would be based on high crimes and misdemeanors, as the language in the Constitution says. But I don't think it's on the political agenda, even though there are a lot of movements, or I don't know, not movements really, but groups and petitions. Do you have internet access?
Well, yeah, you type in Bush and impeachment, and your screen fills up with websites.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, there's a lot of groups out there that are trying to get this done, and I'm just wondering, well, where are we in the process? Why isn't it happening? His invasion of Iraq violated the United Nations Charter and the Nuremberg Charter. These treaties were signed by the USA and are therefore United States law. According to our Constitution, Bush can therefore be legally impeached and removed from office.
Well, the only thing missing here, of course, John, is that the political will. And the Democrats aren't going to do that. I mean, they're pretty pretty weak opponents to begin with. But I mean, the terrible way in which the Republicans used the impeachment proceedings against Clinton probably left a bad taste in most people's mouths. And the hope is, of course, that Bush should have been defeated. I mean, some people think in fact, was, but those damn voting machines in Ohio. All right, I got to take a break. John, thank you very much. We'll be right back. Hey, I think we're going to talk about psycho righties just for about 5 minutes. If you're on the line, hang on. We'll be right back to you.
This is the Riff's award-winning night call.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E, or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew is out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday as I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's Drew. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a Chuck hit me? Well, the Cubs are five outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do this. I've never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. Five outs too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to call the send my card next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Yes. Yes. Broadcast
on the Riff. 101.1.
Riff.
Rocks.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5. How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City Color 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Oh, my God. Maui Time 2K5. The Rift tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Yes,
make your request.
Win cool Riff gear.
And schmooze with the Poobah.
It's your all-request Riff rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
Twice. Is nice.
New for Tuesday on the Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks. It really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's a riff.
It's your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Down here where the job market seems to be a little better. People who say you just need to go to school, it doesn't always work that way. I did everything the way you're supposed to, and yet here I am. P.S. When Bush was in Tampa Friday promoting the Social Security takeaway, we had some 200 protesters out. Keep up the good work. Oh, God, my friends are going to kill me. On Tuesday, Bush is going to be in Detroit to speak to the Detroit Economic Club, and that is down at Cobo Hall. Tuesday at noon, Cobo Arena, and there's going to be demonstrations that I know of beginning at 10:30 and another one at 11:30 to say no to Bush's latest phony crisis. There is no problem with Social Security. This is another way to destroy one of the most successful government programs ever, to turn it all over to his buddies on Wall Street. So I'll get that up on my website, on my Detroit calendar, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E. So that'll be on there tomorrow morning. All right, let's go back to our phones, and here is Mark in Dallas. Mark, thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good. Coughing, though. Go ahead.
Well, I'll follow up on the email you just read. I've called before, but
sure.
College graduate, I'm now moving into my 58th month of unemployment.
Wow.
And the retirement savings have been wiped out. Anyway, just want to follow up on a comment that a couple of your callers have made about the wealthy and their impact on the economy. A couple of quick points. Number one, in the United States, consumers drive the economy because we make up 66% of the economy. And there are a lot more of us than there are wealthy people. Maybe ultra-wealthy people make up 5% of the economy tops. So the demand for goods and services is created by us, the working-class people. It's not created by the ultra-wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is that there's a very simple $10 word that explains why giving tax breaks to the ultra-wealthy is not a good thing to do. It's called the marginal propensity to consume.
Wow. What's that?
What it means is that if you give a dollar to a wealthy person, they have no need to spend it because they're already spending as much money as they want.
Mm-hmm.
You give a dollar to a poor person, they're going to spend it immediately because they've already spent everything they've already made.
Sure, what I call the accelerator effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the technical term, marginal propensity to consume.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, Mark, you've been calling me here on WRF.
You almost 2 years.
You called when I was on IE America.
Exactly.
Right, so let us know from time to time how it goes.
Nothing's changed despite what people want to think.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate your call. I want to read this. You know, I get this every once in a while, and I sort of appreciate it. Usually, you know, no one appreciates criticism, but to some extent I appreciate this, although we're kind of going far afield here. Paul writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I've listened to your show for many years and have really enjoyed it, but for the last year, probably since Bush has been elected, every time I turn, it's bashing Bush. Now, I agree the guy's an idiot, and there's no basis for the in Iraq whatsoever. Do you feel so strongly against the guy that every show is dedicated to him? Of course, I know it's a stupid question. I just enjoyed the day when you talked about numerous topics and not just the idiot president. Paul, I can't begin to tell you how much I dislike having to talk about Bush. I would have loved to have spent my time for the last 4 years or so bashing Gore, who actually won the 2000 election. And but this is a show that talks about public policy, and we have been talking about unions, we have been talking about health care. And on the other hand, anybody can bring up anything they want. And I'm trying to think what we talked about when Bush wasn't the president. A lot of it was we were, you know, talking about Clinton and the Republican attack on him. But yeah, we did. We talked about corporal punishment on kids and I don't know what else, prostitution. Anytime anybody wants to call up and say, Pete, do you think prostitution should be legalized? Or, you know, I mean, I even do have stuff here that I don't even get to. This whole thing about these groups are attacking MTV. And I mean, I don't even have cable, so I never see it. So I was going to ask you. But maybe we'll do that next week. So anyways, Paul, other listeners, if you don't like the direction of the show, we put almost everybody on that gets through. I mean, what happens in other talk shows? The producer makes sure that they're only on topic. You know, I'm so ADD, I couldn't care less. So anytime, you know, just feel free. Well, here is actually an old friend as well. Let's see if she has put her, Diana in Florida, used to listen to me on the IE America radio network as well. She writes in to call talk. Yes, the only reason Bush hasn't been impeached, we were talking about that early, is that the Republicans have control of the House of Representatives, where a move to impeach must begin. We have one chance to impeach Bush, win Democratic control of the House in the 2006 elections. Well, as you probably know, Diana, that's what this Social Security crap is all about. This is another wedge that that Karl Rove, the evil power behind the sock puppet in the Oval Office, has decided is going to be what will defeat the Democrats. That the Democrats will be against private accounts, and people will saying, hey, they're trying to take away my money, so they'll vote for Republicans. Very evil indeed. Okay, back to our phone calls, and this is Mike in, where's Mike? Mike is calling from Wixom. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Actually, it's Mark. How are you, Peter?
It is Mark. If I could read, I could see.
Good. I'm glad.
All right. Go ahead.
Actually, for the last 15 minutes is the first time I've ever heard your show.
Really?
I'm normally not awake at this time.
Yeah.
About 4 callers ago, you started talking about governmental control of accumulation of wealth. Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
Isn't that a form of communism?
You could put any label you want on it, but if without those controls, which one of the things was the income tax of, what was it, 1914, that began to redistribute wealth, began to take greater proportions of wealth from as you progressively made more money and put it back into the general fund, so to speak.
Well, I'm by far not wealthy. Okay. However, I do feel that the equal distribution of wealth is not right. I do feel that it's a form of, you know, you can say communism or not, whatever word you want to put on it. But to do that, I feel that wouldn't be fair, not fair. The word fair is not right. I think that the wealthy, you know, be it the top 5% of wealthy or ultra rich or whatever, I think those people do contribute to the economy in forms of they do. They're innovators and they're entrepreneurs and they do produce jobs.
Now, I mean, they do hire people, that's for sure. Well, for one thing, we weren't talking about equal distribution of income, which would be a form of socialism or communism. We were talking about what's called a more equitable distribution so that that the upper 1% particularly doesn't earn increasingly more, whereas the middle class as a total, whatever happens to you and me, I mean, as individuals is one thing, but as an aggregate of wealth, more and more go to a smaller and smaller percentage of the population. So everyone is involved in wealth creation at one level or another. Yet that because if there's not social control, there's not social management, wealth then just becomes, it becomes a pyramidal shape. And what that does, it destroys democracy because as we've seen, I mean, who gets elected, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican? It's who corporations contribute tens of millions of dollars to.
Well, that's true, too, but isn't Teresa Hines Carey one of the richest people in the world, and she couldn't get her husband elected? So.
Well, she's got a lot of money, but she's nowhere near one of the richest people in the world.
She's pretty close.
She's not anywhere close. All right. Thank you, Mark. Listen to us again. Call again. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, another call. All of her money is what Bill Gates carries in his pocket, so to speak. It's Kevin from Romulus. Kevin, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. I just wanted to talk once more about the healthcare issue that you raised earlier.
Sure.
I just want to look at it in a different perspective. I don't have any solutions for the crisis that we have. I accept that I'm a working class person. I do not have health insurance, and I understand that. I'm just trying to focus on one thing that makes this even worse and makes our whole society really suffer even more.
What's that?
The really horrible choices that we make personally in terms of our health. I work in a food service establishment, and I don't want to give names, but really, I see people buy stuff, and really, it's the most horrible choices, the most irresponsible eating habits, no exercise. Michigan's like the most obese state in the union, as far as I know, and that's part of our problem. Part of it is that we want to pop pills and have instant relief, and you know,
yeah, well,
we don't care two hoots about our health. We don't, you know, and it's not a question of money because to walk in a park doesn't cost money. And I'm a person who has learned from the error of my own ways. I used to have a lot of bad health conditions, and I used to pop pills. And I kind of stepped back and thought about it, and I've changed the way I live. I try to, you know, I try to work out. I try to have exercise. I try to eat sensibly, and I feel much better. One of the things that drives this dependence on pharmaceuticals and big companies and makes the cycle even worse is our really bad habits.
Well, I do agree, and those often are symptomatic of poor people. In other words, health and diet and things like exercise are more prevalent in the upper classes than they are in the poorer classes. I mean, that I'm not making excuses. I'm just giving a description. And I was thinking, too, about for instance, smoking is at the highest level among poorer people and working class people. And you have a situation where they talk about something they could save a lot of money on. And, you know, that I mean, I saw a guy was standing out on near the freeway with a sign saying hungry, and he's smoking. I'm thinking, did he really? I mean, is he really spending $4 a pack? I mean, I you can go into inner city stores and you can get cigarettes, I think, for one for 50 cents or something like that. But here's something that both affects your health and your pocketbook. All right, I actually got to close the show down, so thank you very much, at least this part of it. So appreciate your call. We're going to go into our interviews. And I actually never talked about that both our last caller talking about Romulus. I was in Romulus at UAW Local 174 on Van Born Road on Friday night, listening to the incredible music of Ann Feeney and the over-the-top spoken word of Chris Chandler. If you want to see anything about these folks, you go to chrischandler.org or annfeeney.com and get an idea of their music. But last night, I was around Ferndale, taking in the Ferndale Blues Festival, and all the bars up around 9 Mile and Woodward and what have you all had blues acts. And, I mean, these weren't, on the other hand, these weren't poor people. These were probably mostly middle-class people. Smoke was so bad. I went to see Little Sonny, one of Detroit's legendary blues harmonicas. What do you call it? Harpist? Harmonicist or whatever it would be. And eventually I just got driven out of there. My eyes were just burning. And one of these days, we were talking about other subjects. I want to talk to smokers and understand what you understand what you're doing yourself, what you're doing to yourself, and you understand what you're doing to other people. How do you do it? I don't get it. All right, that's stuff for another time. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening and calling in on this segment. But check out these interviews. I think you're going to find them pretty interesting. Right after these.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They're committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit ucmore.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today, like every other day, for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men.
To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh? The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101 WRIF and Budweiser present
Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City color 33 on the rip lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5.
The Rift tradition continues.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this bud's for you.
From your home for Maui Time 2K5.
101 WRIF.
Chance to take control of the WRIF playlist.
With the guy who lost control a long time ago.
The Riffs All Request Riff and Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown, the big unit.
Weekday nights at 9
on 101 WRIF.
Detroit's Rock Station.
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 Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We relived an unfortunate encounter we had with Santa Claus from a few years back when we learned he wasn't wearing the required Santa outfit in its entirety. It was disgusting.
Do you wear the big black belt?
I have a big black belt, yes.
Okay, all right. Well,
and
you're
I don't
just
wear it continuously.
But when you're going to schools and stuff, surely you've got the black belt on and everything, right?
It's not really necessary. They recognize me.
Oh, man. What do you show up in jeans or something? I mean,
Santa, you can't be in civilian clothes when you're Santa Claus.
I can't?
No.
You can't just waltz in there with a T-shirt, with a pack of Marlboros in the pocket, and some jeans, boots.
I don't do that.
No? No.
I try to answer all the letters. I usually enclose a picture.
Uh-huh.
Santa Claus.
With the hat on?
Knows me. I think one or two of them has a hat on.
All right.
I'm not too sure your dipstick's touching all of
them. He sends them in the nude.
Yeah, maybe I'm a couple bricks short of a load, Santa.
Yeah, your elevator don't go to the top.
Yeah, that's my kind of Santa. Just rips people.
Stick your Christmas off your ass.
Stop it!
Drew and Mike in the morning.
Broadcast program.
On the Riff.
Riff. 101-101.
W-R-I-F.
Riff.
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 Rocks.
And now, the Riff presents this Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment. Thank you. This Detroit Lions Super Bowl moment has been brought to you by 101 WRIF. This station rocks.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff.
All day Thursday
from your walk right in free station.
101. The Riff.
And in a state of martial law. And if we think for a moment about how that would be if we had military occupation and a state of martial law in our country, we start to be pretty skeptical about the relative freedom of the election taking place under those circumstances. But the other question that prompted me to write, and I think is really very important to think about, is that almost all of the media, and certainly the Democrat Party critics of the election, have discussed the election, or were discussing the election, in terms of how it would affect the U.S. exit strategy from Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And all parties agreed that what was going on was a process of trying to extricate the United States from Iraq. The Bush administration was saying that a freely elected government or a legitimate government and the training of a serious Iraq military force or militia were the two requirements that were needed before the United States could withdraw. And the Democratic Party and the sort of loyal opposition accepted those assumptions, and then the criticism was, well, perhaps the election is premature. Can the election take place if there's going to be a lot of violence? Will the election be legitimate if a large part of the Sunni voters fail to vote, and so on? But the loyal opposition accepted the framework that the purpose of the election was to extricate the United States from Iraq.
Sure.
And I think it's more realistic to pursue the idea that the purpose of the election was to enable the United States to stay in Iraq forever. And so that's the second most important assumption, that the purpose of the election was, in a sense, to ease the burden on the Bush administration by increasing the legitimacy of the U.S. occupation, not so much in the eyes of the Iraqis, who know full well what it's about, but in the eyes of the American voters and the American Congress and the American media. So those are the two assumptions that I think are debatable, mm-hmm. but the most important to consider.
Well, Frank Broadhead, let me tell you the assumptions that I begin with, looking at the whole picture, and then get your reaction, that the entire invasion was illegitimate. It was in opposition to international law and the United Nations regulations for when a country can actually attack. It was based at best on faulty information and at worst on lies to the American people and to the world. But can and I understand what you're saying about this is a way the United States can stay there, but can a good result come about from a bad initial entry point? In other words, the war was illegitimate. 100,000 Iraqi civilians have died. There's thousands now of American casualties. But it was somewhat moving to me. I mean, I thought this election is going to be a total scam. But it was moving in many ways to see the Iraqis that said, yes, I'm going to vote. I'm going to participate in what, I never could under the U.S. propped up dictator, Saddam Hussein. I guess I'm asking for a reaction to the actual mm-hmm. process of voting itself.
So the first question you asked, I mean, essentially is a version of does the end justify the means?
Right.
And I think that in this day and age where the means becomes, a very violent war, there's a tremendous burden of proof on the idea that this horrible war can be justified by any means, but by any end, rather. But going to the specific election day stuff itself, one would have to be a stone not to be moved by the spirit and courage and determination of the people we saw on television or reported in the news in Iraq who were going to vote. It was obvious that both in terms of the numbers that went and in terms of their attitude, that this was enormously important to them, and that this represented a kind of liberation that they had not been able to express very often or perhaps in such large numbers ever before. The question is, I think, in a sense, what did this mean to them? And did our media report to us accurately about what it meant to them?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good approach.
Okay.
Tell me.
So I think that the media's main core interpretation was that people in Iraq were in accord with the U.S.-sponsored election Let me come back to that in a second, but we were in accord with the election, and that their participation in the election represented an affirmation that the Bush policy or the U.S. occupation was intended to bring democracy to Iraq. And there are a lot of reasons to question that. Just to take two simple examples, the very high turnout in Kurdistan or in the Kurdish-dominated provinces, all reports say that focus on this, that the high turnout was to increase the likelihood or to solidify the certainty that Kurdistan will be at worst an autonomous zone within Iraq, that it will continue to have the great autonomy that it has had for the last 10 years. And their maximum goal would be to have an independent Kurdistan.
Right.
And apparently younger Kurdish leaders, not the Barzani and the older Kurdish leaders, set up an informal, parallel, non-official voting system where they asked people who were voting to cast a second ballot on independence or not. And Robert Fisk, the premier Middle East reporter, reported today that the vote was about 11 to 1 in favor of independence.
Well, that could not have made the Bush administration happy, nor the Iraqis, and certainly not Turkey.
Right. So, you know, it's complicated what this means, and it doesn't, you know, necessarily mean any one thing, but it's clear that a very large turnout in Kurdistan would be best interpreted as reasserting Kurdish, in a sense, national interests rather than supporting the Bush occupation.
And we should tell, and I guess remind listeners, that that the Kurdish north in Iraq has virtually functioned autonomously since the first Gulf War.
That's
and,
right.
And they've established a fairly peaceful and I believe somewhat and pretty democratic situation. I know there's opposition press and parties and what have you. So I suspect that they would like to probably be rid of the factionalism of Iraq proper.
Well, for sure, and this might be a bit of a digression, but the main issue now is whether the city of Kirkuk will be included in an autonomous or independent Kurdistan. And this is a very big issue because this is, you know, a source of enormous oil wealth.
I was going to say, it's all, you know, ultimately, when it's about three letters, O-I-L. You know, actually, that's a quote in late 1990, Bob Dole, when he was asked what this was all about, and he said it's about three letters, O-I-L.
Well, that might be right.
And then he then, of course, then it was, they said, oh, it was for the liberation of Kuwait and what have you. Yeah.
Now, a second point, the second major voting bloc that participated in the election would be the Shiite voters in the South. And there are two things we have to say about this. First of all, that through not just Grand Ayatollah Sistani, but through the entire Shiite religious network, it was propagandized or put out that it was a religious duty to vote. And I have no way of knowing the impact of this, but I think it's a reasonable conclusion that this was seen as really a community obligation, one that could not be lightly avoided. But the second thing is that the surveys in the sort of alternative media of people who talk to voters in the South, and this is actually where most of the U.S. Camera crews were. If they weren't in Baghdad, they were in the South, where it was relatively safe because the Shiites had their own army, in a sense. The voters were saying very frequently that they were voting both for a government and for an end to the American occupation. And, again, this is very reasonable because the Shiites have, in a sense, as a community or as a region of the country under the leadership of Ayatollah Sistani, have been sort of cooperating with the American occupation and playing by the rules with the assumption that once the rules are played out, that they'll be able to call, if not all the shots, a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
So from the Bush administration's point of view, you have a substantial voting bloc voting for independence or autonomy and another voting bloc voting for at least in part, the end of the U.S. occupation.
Well, let me interrupt you at this point. In fact, let me reintroduce you if people are just joining us on the Peter Werby Show. My guest is Frank Broadhead. He's co-author with Edward S. Herman of Demonstration Elections, U.S. Staged Elections in the Dominican Republic, Vietnam, and El Salvador. And it's interesting. That's why I like to have guests on, because my assumptions are challenged, and I suppose a lot of the listeners are as well. But I was assuming, since nothing has really gone the way that the brainiacs that put this adventure together thought, I mean, the whole idea that it would be all paid for by oil money, that that we'd be welcome as liberators, that I doubt whether that the United States would have invaded had they anticipated this was going to go on. And there's no, you know, this has not come to a conclusion yet, obviously. Anyway, my assumption was, in direct opposite, in opposition to what you've said, Frank Broadhead, that I thought this is going to be the way they could say, okay, we're out of here. They don't want to have that the Republicans do not want to have an ongoing insurgency going in the run-up to the 2006 elections, when they really think they're going to be able to consolidate complete power over the United States, and that if they were asked to leave, they even though they're planning this multi-billion-dollar embassy in Iraq, they can say, okay, we're out of here, and then whatever happens, happens. So argue with me. Tell me why you think they want to stay rather than get out.
Well, to a certain extent, we won't know a lot of stuff until the archives are open long after we're dead and so on. But I think that there's already a lot of evidence to say that the United States intends to create the situation where, at a minimum, Iraq is a client state. And I'm not sure. I disagree, I think, with the very first thing you said, that if the Bush administration knew how much trouble this was going to cause, they wouldn't have invaded. I think that there's every reason to think that although things are really screwing up and nothing is going as they planned, and they've proven themselves really incapable of doing the simplest piece of reconstruction, still this prize that they have in their hand with 130,000, 150,000 American troops and some ongoing sort of occupation activities that I'll come back to in a second that will extend the U.S. Control more or less indefinitely, that this is the world's greatest prize. And without, you know, saying that there's an equivalence here, I would say that from the point of view of the people running the government, which is not a gigantic number of people, from the point of view of people running the government, this is an opportunity that calls for sort of a level of national sacrifice that might be similar to the United States participation in World War II.
So in other words, you're talking about the prize, but the oil and the military's strategic positioning in the Middle East.
This is a fabulous prize that is really incomparable in, you know, more or less modern history. And if the United States can pull this off, it's well worth it. And the fact that it's not going well, I think, has to be looked at another way, that it's going at all. And there's, you know, a very kind of minimal effective opposition in the world to this, and from the point of view of the Bush people, you know, it's well worth the struggle, and if it takes another couple of years, so be it.
And I guess they've seen that even though the intense level of opposition in the United States, it ebbs and flows. I mean, certainly the opposition, as much as the anti-war movement has done here and around the world, they still have a compliant media. They still have a either the Democrats' loyal opposition, or I usually just refer to it as another party, as opposed to anything having the real meaning of opposition. Actually, you said you wanted to talk something about the occupation or the...
I think that if we think of, just for the sake of convenience, to divide up the U.S. actions in Iraq right now into military, political, and economic. In each one of those spheres, we can see that there really is a lot of work going on to lay the groundwork for perpetual occupation, and obviously it would be at as low as possible a level of troop occupation, but nevertheless, because Iraq will remain sort of an important military base for U.S. Domination of much of the rest of Central Asia and the Middle East, substantial military force. So, in terms of military, just for example, perhaps I might just stick to this. Obviously, Iraq now has no air force, it has no armor, And so for the foreseeable future, Iraq will be a military protectorate of the United States. Second, we're very much in the dark about what the plans are around military bases, but the all of the newspaper reports report somewhere between 4 and 14 military bases, and I would read this as 4 large and perhaps another 10 small military bases. The contracts have been let now for reconstruction of these bases, so this is, you know, a serious input that's going on. Also, the United States is training what will be the future Iraq Army, or at least its hope will be some kind of effective militia. And there's a long history of the outcome or the effects of U.S. training of a military force in a foreign country, which is a very close working relationship, and in, you know, most cases a sort of a dependent relationship, where if trouble arises, the United States can call on some of its military assets to do a coup or to block certain paths that they don't care for, and so on.
Well, some listeners might be thinking, yeah, so what's wrong with all this? We'll have access to cheap oil on, you know, till it all runs out in a few years, and we'll be strategically positioned in case we start getting into conflicts with a revitalized Russia or with the growing might of China. What's the downside of this? Few thousand. Most Americans don't seem to care about Iraqis, and hey, if you got volunteers going over there and willing to give their lives and parts of their body. It's just a little sacrifice, as you said, a sacrifice for us to continue along the imperial path we have. What's wrong?
Well, the argument, I mean, basically we're talking about should the United States become, you know, a really serious worldwide imperial force, or at least an imperial force larger than any that history has ever known. And there's now a substantial literature coming from sort of Harvard-type intellectuals and so on that says, yeah, this is a good thing. Not only is it good for the United States, but it creates a kind of semblance of world order. I think there are, both at the present and in history, two serious downsides to empire. Essentially, it corrupts the empire from within. It corrupts our democracy in lots of serious ways that could be discussed. This is no longer the Middle Ages and stuff. This is not an era where a foreign nation and really a foreign nation motivated by a foreign religion can successfully, without gigantic opposition, rule another people. This is an idea whose time has come and gone, and if it's coming back again, it can only be maintained by, I think, a level of military force that would be unacceptable both to Americans and to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So without arguing whether this is good or bad, I simply don't think it's practical. It won't work.
Well, am I remembering this right? Paul Kennedy, conservative historian, wrote a book that remind me if you know the title, something like The Rise and Fall of the Great Nations or Great Empires.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and he said that the key to the destruction, Jared Diamond might look at it differently, but in this case has been the overextension of the empire into other regions beyond their home and the military expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we can have, I mean, it doesn't look now we're spending more money on schools in many ways in Iraq than in the United States, not in absolute numbers, but they're closing around here, and we're rebuilding them there. You know, we only have about a 2 minutes left, and this is a long question. George Bush talks about one of the values of this election is being a key to democratizing the region. And so you would think that the Saudis and the Egyptians and the rest of our allies, they would be quaking in their boots because there are these horrible dictatorships. And are they in George Bush's sights?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that yes, that the election is a threat to the dictatorships in the surrounding areas. I don't think that the people in Egypt or Jordan or so on need a reminder that they live in a dictatorship. But I think that the visuals, the media, the TV of what's happening in Iraq is bound to give a boost and a level of enthusiasm to secularists or to pro-democracy forces in the area around Iraq. What's on Bush's mind in terms of democratizing the Middle East, I think, is pretty murky, and I think he has his hands full with Iraq at the moment, and I wouldn't expect him to try to take on major regime change in Saudi Arabia, for example. But I think that the election will be a kind of virus or communicate an enthusiasm for democracy, which might serve this purpose.
There is always a tendency to see every day as kind of the end of history. Yet, is it possible, Frank Broadhead, to look into the future, or at least maybe on your part? What are you going to be looking for in the days to come in terms of how this election affects things?
Well, I think that the election supports the Bush policy of long-term domination of Iraq, and that it's doing so in terms of addressing, deliberately very, very important American values about democracy and freedom and so on, but simply misapplying them or misinterpreting them. I think that looking at it from the point of view of the anti-war movement, I think that it's important for us to similarly address the issues that sort of legitimize the occupation and the ongoing war and so on. And I would look most importantly at the disaffection within the military and the growing organizations like Veterans for Peace or Military Families Speak Out and so on, because obviously they have a very large legitimacy.
You know, Frank, I'm sorry to say, okay, we're completely out of time. My guest has been Frank Broadhead. I would recommend his book that he wrote along with Edward S. Herman, Demonstration Elections, U.S. Staged Elections in the Dominican Republic, Vietnam, and El Salvador by South End Press. I believe it's southendpress.org. I'll have a link to Frank Broadhead's article, Reframing the Iraq Election, on my website, peterwerby.com. Thanks so much for joining
me. Thank you very much for joining me. February is more.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes, and this is the care you deserve. You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Call Dr. Kombatsi today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Kombatsi himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877-SEE-MORE. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Kombatsi at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Drew was out ill and did one of the worst things you can do when in trouble. Leave us a message about it. Well, we had to compare a healthy Drew message with today's sick Drew message to see if we could hear a difference. Oh, boy.
It's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday, as I am going to the World Series.
Wow.
Hey, Mike, it's Drew. I am sick as a dog. I feel like a truck hit me. Well, the Cubs are 5 outs away. I shouldn't speak so soon. But I've got a ticket to the Thursday night Cubs World Series game. This is next week. And I don't feel like you want this. There's no way I can do it. I swear to God, I never felt so sick in my life. I don't know what is wrong with me. But there's no way I can come in. So anyway, just wanted to drop that in ASAP. I found out it's too soon. I hope I don't jinx the Cubs. So I'll see you.
Oh,
I feel like and I'm going to call the friend that's talk next. Thanks.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast
on the Riff. 101-101.
WRIF.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite RIF tradition.
As 101, WRIF and Budweiser present Maui Time 2K5.
How would you like to jet off to Hawaii with Big Daddy Arthur P, soaking in the sunshine on the pristine beaches of Kahanapali in Maui? Then just listen for the poobah to say those three magic words.
When you hear it, be Motor City color 33 on the RIF lines.
Just like that, you could be having some serious fun in the sun, chilling on beautiful Kahanapali Beach in Maui.
Plus, listen for details on Maui Waui parties throughout the Motor City, where you can win a trip to Maui in person.
Maui Time 2K5. The RIF tradition continues. Brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Detroit, this Bud's for you. From your home for Maui Time 2K5. 101 WRIF.
Make your request.
Win cool RIF gear.
And schmooze with the Dubai.
It's your all-request RIF rock and ride home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
RIF.
Rocks.
Twice
is nice.
Here's Tuesday on the RIF.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the RIF all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite RIF rock bands.
Plus, the RIF gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the RIF rock.
Double the RIF prizes.
Learn it, know it, live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the RIF. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's a RIF.
your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screaming Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
United States of America. So understanding the history of Mexico, and particularly understanding the engagement between those of Mexican origin and African Americans, it seems to me, should be a prime priority for those of us who care about where this country is going, and indeed where North America is going as a whole. The Mexican Revolution was the first radical transformation of the 20th century, bringing far-reaching land reform and a certain amount of democratic promise as well. The major engagement of Black Americans with this process is through the military. The United States was heavily dependent upon Black troopers, particularly along the 2,000-mile border stretching from Southern California to Southern Texas that separates Mexico from the United States of America. Now, your listeners might be thinking, well, how was it that the United States became dependent upon Black troopers when it had a state-sanctioned policy of white supremacy during right. that time? And that's a very good question, and I think there is a very simple explanation. Number one, then as now, joining the military was not seen as an ideal career choice for those who had other opportunities. The pay was probably about $13 a month, which was hardly enough to sustain one's livelihood. Therefore, those with other kinds of opportunities usually went elsewhere. Secondly, if you look at the component elements of what is called the Euro-American community, you'll see that there were questions about their loyalties and allegiances. For example, German-Americans, then as now one of the largest components of what some call the white population, the United States was in conflict with Germany during the first two decades of the 20th century. That explodes in these two nations crossing swords during World War I. As a result, there was some question as to where the allegiances and the loyalties of German Americans would lie, particularly since so many of them were recent immigrants. Note that today, in 2005, there has been an attempt to rename French fries in light of France's refusal to join the invasion of Iraq. You know, French kissing has become freedom kissing.
Well, just like what during World War One, they what do they call them? They took Frankfurters and hamburgers and renamed them as well.
Exactly, sauerkraut becomes liberty cabbage. There was an attempt to eliminate the teaching of German from high schools, a very sad and unfortunate effort, which helps to contribute to the fact why so many of us are monolingual, whereas many of our neighbors in Western Europe, of course, are multilingual. In any case, there is also questions about some of the loyalties and allegiances of the Irish American population, another huge population group in this country. Because, of course, the United States was in alliance with Great Britain. We all are familiar with the historic tensions that have existed between London and those of Irish descent, tensions which, of course, are still spilling over to a degree in Northern Ireland as we speak. So almost by a process of elimination, the United States was left to rely upon these Black troopers. But, of course, there hangs a tail because ultimately there is a conflict between trying to maintain national security on the one hand and white supremacy on the other.
Well, let me ask you a question. I think that, I mean, to some people outside of the Black community, Blacks existed as slaves. Then there was the horrible period of segregation. Then they entirely disappear. Then there's the civil rights movement. You're filling in these gaps, Gerald Horn, with your book Black and Brown about African Americans and the Mexican Revolution. But I remember from the last book of yours that we talked about race war, white supremacy, and the Japanese attack on the British Empire, the British were able to successfully take African troops, bring them to Asia to fight the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And just as some people have put forth the proposition that Black Americans acted as or functioned as an internal colony, repressed and exploited, how did they get? But in both cases, they fought well and they were loyal to the empire that had no use for them really, other than as cannon fodder.
Well, yes. Native Americans, of course, do not view benignly their encounter with what were called the Buffalo Soldiers. That is to say, the black troopers, oftentimes called Buffalo Soldiers, supposedly because their hair resembled the mane of a buffalo. There are still rather pained and agonizing complaints from many Native American groupings about how they were pulverized and routed by these Buffalo Soldiers. And, of course, there's even a certain amount of conflict within the black American community to this day about whether or not that chapter should be claimed as a glorious chapter in black American history. At the same time, though, it's interesting to point out, and this ties into my previous point about the conflict between white supremacy and national security, that Germany made significant overtures in allegiance with Mexico directed at these black American troopers, telling them that if Germany were to topple the U.S. government, then black Americans would receive a better shake. Mexico made similar kinds of appeals when Mexico was trying to fend off intervention by the United States. And there is evidence to suggest that there were a certain amount of defections from the Buffalo Soldiers to the Mexican side, although the point is true that this was a distinct minority that did so defect. But at the same time, the U.S. authorities always had to be conscious as to whether or not the kind of lynching, Jim Crow, casual persecution that was visited upon black Americans and the troopers themselves, for that matter, whether or not that might make these troopers more susceptible to overtures from the real and imagined antagonists of the United States of America. And it's that kind of dynamic that eventually leads to a retreat from white supremacy in the name of national security.
Black and Brown is the book, African Americans of the Mexican Revolution, 1910 to 1920 is the period of the Mexican Revolution. My guest, Professor Gerald Horn, we're talking with him at the University of Houston. You talked about the American troops being staffed quite heavily by black Americans along the Mexican border. What were the interests? I mean, this wasn't hostile regimes, were they? I mean, why did there have to be national security to begin with?
Well, you have to realize that the Mexican Revolution unleashes a tidal wave, a tsunami of violence that this country has hardly seen since, fortunately. And certainly, it's probably the epitome of violence in the 20th century. I mean, southern Texas and the major counties and areas about as large as the state of Connecticut was virtually in chaos. There were frequent forays across the border. Recall that one of the most devastating attacks on the U.S. mainland before September 11, 2001, happens approximately 90 years ago when Pancho Villa, who is considered to be a hero in Mexico, basically sacks Columbus, New Mexico, and then crosses the border back into northern Mexico. He's chased by the Buffalo Soldiers in what was called a punitive expedition. And in one of the few defeats ever inflicted upon these Buffalo Soldiers, they encountered a stinging setback at what was called the Battle of Carrizal, where many were killed, a number were taken prisoner, and indeed the picture in my book, Black and Brown, is basically a picture from that time of the Negro troopers who had been taken prisoner by Mexico. So, and I should also mention as well that even though a popular mythology suggests that the frontier had closed by the 1890s, that is to say that Native American armed resistance had been shut down by the 1890s, as late as 1918, 1919, as the Mexican border is on fire, and as the United States embarks upon war in Europe, and still is dealing with an ongoing conflict in the Philippines, by the way, you still have the Yaqui Native American group in the southwestern part of the United States and also in the northern reaches of Mexico who are still on the warpath, so to speak. And, of course, it's the Buffalo Soldiers who are basically involved in what is seen nowadays to be viewed as the last stand of the Native Americans, which was a battle with the Yaquis in about 1918, 1919. So there were many reasons for these troopers to be strung along this 2,000-mile border, not least forays from Mexico into the United States, namely the Columbus, Mexico sacking, and of course the rest of Native Americans, particularly the Yaquis, who I've just made reference to.
Yeah, well, I think probably a lot of us that know some of history have heard of the Pancho Villa's raid and the General Pershing's punitive raid. Of course, up till we just spoke, I didn't know the composition of his troops. Pershing was called Black Jack Pershing. Does that have anything to do with his troops?
Oh, yeah. The Negro troopers, it was thought that they could not fight effectively unless they had the white commanding officers. The troops who were defeated at Carrizal, for example, had a Captain Boyd fresh out of West Point, and like many of those men who were fresh out of West Point, was a bit overzealous and led his troops rather casually and zealously into battle. And of course, General Pershing, Black Jack, as he's referred to, also was known for his commanding of Negro troops as well. It's interesting, Pershing's name was actually originally, it wasn't Pershing, he changed it, it was a German name. And I would suspect that he changed his name in order to advance in the military, because as I said, at that particular moment in time, those of German origin were not the most popular people in this country.
Tell us, Professor Horn, you suddenly have introduced the word Negro, which is sort of thought of as the old-fashioned term for Black Americans or African Americans. What is its usage there? I know you're always very precise about language.
Well, when I start talking about what happened 90 years ago, sometimes I get transported back in time. And certainly when you have to do this research, you have to begin trying to think like the people during that time, if you're going to represent at least somewhat accurately what they were thinking and saying. And sometimes just sort of unconsciously I fall into that habit of using the term that was used 90 years ago. Certainly I'm not trying to make a political statement.
Okay, well, I don't know if you've read yet Kevin Boyle's book, The Ark of Justice, about the Ocean Suite. Well, he makes a point. In fact, he talks about that in introduction, that he originally wrote it using the word black and African-American. But he said that when people read it, they said it rang a lot better with the language of the 1920s, where that's set in Detroit.
Right.
So he does employ that. And in a way, hasn't the word sort of been resuscitated in that before it was it sort of suggested a more passive stance, and black, of course, was very, very, in the beginning of the late 1950s and early 60s, it kind of was more in the face of segregation, but now it's kind of had at least a slight revival among historians.
Well, yeah, and I think it has to do with its historic usage. I think those of us who are sifting through these documents from decades ago, and you're taking notes, and if you're taking down quotations, well, that's what people were saying 90 years ago. And so you take down the quotation, then when you render the quotation in your book, then you write down that very same term. And then when you're interviewed, sometimes you once again sort of represent or recreate the usage of that time. But like I said, to be clear, I'm not trying to make a political statement.
Okay.
How
about maybe this is another little aspect of it, and we get an idea of how and why people write. I mean, this when this histories, and many of these histories you've written in your work, when you read about the way people of African descent have been treated, and as a African American man, is it dispassionate? Do you get angry? Are you joyful? I mean, what are the emotions when? I mean, as a historian, it's supposed to be absolutely objective, and I guess unless you're writing about 7th century China, it's probably kind of hard. How do you react to it as a human being?
Well, I have all of those emotions. I'm doing research now on the African slave trade, and that's probably moved me more in a more emotional sense than anything I've ever done. Just reading case after case of kidnapping can wear you down after a while, and case after case of maltreatment and mistreatment. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because, of course, sometimes you want to that helps when you're trying to convey the horror of something like the African slave trade. At the same time, there's a certain kind of exuberance or even joy when one is reading about how people are overcoming such maltreatment, particularly when they have the assistance of allies, which is oftentimes the case when one is looking at the rather troubled experience of Africans in North America.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to your book, Black and Brown, African Americans and the Mexican Revolution, 1910 to 1920. You're listening to Peter Werby's show. My guest is Professor Gerald Horn. This just maybe as a I don't know if it's really qualifies in a, as an aside, but since PBS, as a public broadcasting mm-hmm. system, had this recent biography of Jack Johnson, the black heavyweight boxing champion, how does he figure into the Mexican Revolution?
Yeah, Ken Burns' latest work, Unforgivable Blackness, The Rise and Fall of Jack Johnson, a four-hour documentary biography, is quite useful, but those of you who've seen it might recall that he doesn't engage, at least to any significant degree, the experience of Jack Johnson in Mexico. Jack Johnson, of course, was the heavyweight champion of the world, boxing champion, a precursor, a forefather, if you like, of Joe Louis and Muhammad Ali, born in Galveston, Texas in 1878, becomes the heavyweight champion of the world approximately 30 years after that. That, of course, unleashes a search for so-called great white hope because Jackson, as Burns' documentary makes clear, was viewed as the so-called emperor of masculinity as a result of his holding the heavyweight crown, and this was seen as being an affront to the predicates of white supremacy. Sadly, for those who hold that point of view, the search for great white hope was unavailing, and so a new tack is adopted. He is indicted under the so-called Mann Act, M-A-N-N Act, that is to say, supposedly taking a white woman across state lines for illicit purposes, including debauchery. He is tried and convicted, but rather than submit himself to prison, he goes into exile. He lives and travels throughout Europe, pre-revolutionary Russia, calls Barcelona, Spain, his favorite city, before decamping to Mexico at a time when relations between United States and Mexico are rather tense because President Carranza of Mexico, in trying to foil intervention by the United States, has entered into something of an alliance, not only with Germany, but with Japan. There are all these cross-border forays that I've just made reference to. And in a sense, what Carranza is doing is using coercive diplomacy against the United States in order to beat back what he perceived to be a possible U.S. intervention. Jack Johnson aligns himself with that approach. He tries to attract black Americans across the border to live in Mexico, where he says that they will be able to escape Jim Crow lynching and all the rest. He sets up a land company where land is sold at a very inexpensive price to those who are willing to accept his offer. However, Carranza is dislodged in 1920. A few months later, Jack Johnson discovers that his situation in Mexico is rather tenuous, so he turns himself in, crosses the border from Tijuana, Mexico, into San Diego County, Southern California, USA, in the late summer of 1920, and, of course, is dispatched immediately to a prison cell in Leavenworth, and with that, the curtain is rung down on a very interesting, intriguing chapter in not only black American history, but U.S.-Mexico relations, when African Americans were trying to leverage the revolutionary process in Mexico for domestic gain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see we have a couple of minutes left, and I hope I don't spend part of that just on the interest I have in history itself. And we began at the start of our conversation with you talking about Black History Month, and to me this is all history. Is it proper? I mean, to have it be Black history? I mean, you know what I'm saying? As opposed to it should be a full history of which this is a critical part, or is that splitting hairs?
Well, no. I mean, I think that certainly there needs to be both. In my opinion, there needs to be a full, comprehensive history where the contribution of all are included, but at the same time, I think it's worthwhile to highlight the history of certain groups, particularly groups with unresolved grievances, groups whose history has historically been neglected or overshadowed. Of course, March is Women's History Month, and I think that's something that we all should applaud and support. And I think that it's not impossible to operate on both tracks, to call for a comprehensive history marking the contributions and the setbacks and the victories and the celebrations of all of us, and also having a particular highlighting of certain groups as well.
Mm-hmm. 60 seconds, and this is probably fairly complex. This is an extraordinary, interesting history in and of itself. What's always good if we can take these lessons of the past into today? Is there something in Black and Brown to suggest things about what are happening today?
Well, just to begin where we were, to end where we began, Mexico, of course, is becoming integrated into the U.S. economy. The Mexican-American population is surging in cities like Los Angeles, for example, and Phoenix and Houston, Texas. You have very complex, complicated relations between Mexican-Americans and African-Americans, not to mention complex relations between Mexican-Americans and what is called, at least in Texas, the so-called Anglo population, or what you might call the Euro-American, or others might call the white population. And I think that we'll better be able to navigate these rather difficult and tricky waters if we're familiar with the history of our relations. I recall when I was living in Southern California, sometimes there would be complaints from Black Americans about how Mexican Americans allegedly were encroaching upon our territory, so to speak, how they were taking advantage of our struggles without any recognition that their presence it goes back as far as our presence in North America.
Indeed.
And yes.
Manning Marable, who's the director of Center for Contemporary Black History, says Gerald Horn is one of America's most outstanding and prolific historians. In his latest work, Horn illustrates the extensive involvement of Black Americans in Mexico's revolutionary past. The book is Black and Brown, African Americans and the Mexican Revolution, 1910 to 1920. Gerald Horn, thanks for being with me.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riff's Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed in this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to...
Tired of low-price LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find that it quadruples when you actually go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. At the Lake Laser Eye Center, there are no gimmicks and no games. Only $9.99 an eye or as low as $33 per month per eye. You know your costs up front with no hidden charges. You receive top personalized service and see Dr. Combati himself at each visit. The Lake Laser Eye Center is not an assembly line designed to get people in and out as quickly as possible. They are committed to you and offer the highest standards of eye care using the state-of-the-art Visix S4 laser with active eye tracking. One visit to Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center and you'll understand why he's one of the most respected and accurate eye surgeons in Michigan. You owe it to yourself to receive the best care for the best price. Appointments are going fast. Call Lake Laser Eye Center today at 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877-UC-MORE. Again, 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or visit UCMORE.com. These are your eyes at this is the care you deserve. You've searched today, like every other day, for those annoying reading glasses. It's gotten to the point where you just can't see the newspaper without them. Well, now you don't have to search for your glasses anymore due to a new procedure from Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center called Near Vision CK. Near Vision CK is a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure that's usually done on one eye and for just $9.99 or as low as $33 a month. This exciting procedure will finally eliminate your need for reading glasses. Call Dr. Combati today at the Lake Laser Eye Center, 1-877-UC-MORE, to set up your free consultation. You'll see Dr. Combati himself, and he'll take the time to answer all of your questions and thoroughly explain the Near Vision CK procedure. That number again is 1-877, the letter U, S-E-E-M-O-R-E. Or you can visit the website, www.useemore.com, for Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. And get ready to throw those reading glasses away.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
It's coming to the Novi Expo Center on Saturday, April 2nd. It's the 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by your Detroit Dodge dealers. If you own a company or retail shop, such as a skate shop, men's clothing store, fitness and health, tax service, sporting goods, jewelry store, music and entertainment, furniture, golf, gadgets, or anything that interests men, this is your opportunity to introduce your product or service to thousands of metro area men. To participate in the Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. Many special features and attractions will be announced soon. To participate in Motor City Men's Expo as a sponsor or exhibitor, call this number now, 248-591-6841. That's 248-591-6841. You've got to be there. The Motor City Men's Expo, brought to you by Dodge. Grab life by the horns.
Michigan winter. Bitter cold. Snow. Sleet. Freezing rain. Black ice on the roads.
Okay, I'll bet Maui sounds really good right now, huh?
It's back.
The Motor City's favorite rip tradition.
As 101.